Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
For the past few months, many of you have been complaining about, you can't vote for Hillary, you can't vote for Trump. Many of you, like myself, have said Trump is a screwball and a crackpot, and Hillary, she's just crooked and lying and always so evasive. And so you've been looking for the alternative. And unfortunately, the third parties haven't been given enough exposure so that you can hear what their candidates for both the presidency and vice presidency say on a regular basis. Today, we're talking with the Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, his running mate, William Weld. William Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, and he's joining us here today on the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Gary.
Curtis, great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, you know, there's more and more disaffection out there amongst people who are saying, gee, is this the best we can do, Hillary and Trump? So what do you say to sort of fill that void, to get them to understand that yours is a viable third party with an opportunity to really make major strides in this presidential campaign?
Well, Curtis, I think that from a philosophic standpoint, we're in line with most Americans. I think about 60% of Americans believe that government should be out of my pocketbook and out of my bedroom, fiscally conservative, socially inclusive. And I think most Americans are skeptical over our military interventions, which have made the world less safe, not more safe. When we get involved in regime change when it comes to other countries, in my lifetime, I can't think of one of those situations where it's been better and not worse. So philosophically, I think we're in line with most Americans. And then the fact that the two of us, myself and Bill Weld, were former Republican governors that served in heavily Democrat states. We each got reelected by being fiscally conservative and socially inclusive. And so we've been there, we've done that. We've actually, you don't have to guess as to whether or not things are going to run okay. We did it.
All right, well, Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson, the Republicans, they still seem to have many internal disputes about the Trump candidacy. Have you noticed that out of the people who are coming to your cause, more tend to be, as both you and Bill Weld were at one point, Republicans disaffected by the Trump campaign, or maybe some of those who just are not at all convinced that Hillary is telling them the truth and will run an administration that they can depend on?
Well, if I were able to measure it, I would say it's just really 50-50. I don't think Democrats could balance a checkbook if it was staring them in the face, and then Republicans, they become so adverse to people's own liberties and freedoms. And I think the Republicans, because of the war on drugs, you know, we've got the highest incarceration rate of any country in the world. Curtis, I refuse to believe we are any less law-abiding than other countries.
What would your position be as president about the recreational use of marijuana and its application across the nation for medical purposes?
Well, I've supported that since 1999. I was the highest elected official in the United States to call for the legalization of marijuana. We've got tens of millions of Americans who are convicted felons that, but for our drug laws, would otherwise be tax-paying, law-abiding citizens. Let's end the war on drugs.
Now, in terms of the war, obviously there are ramifications to the civil war in Syria. We've seen some graphic images of children severely damaged, killed as a result of the conflict. Hillary would like to bring many more thousands of refugees from Syria than the Barack Obama administration is admitting. Under your administration, would you open up the gates to Syrian refugees, or like Trump, would you try to close them?
Well, I think we have an obligation to receive those refugees. We should be receiving our fair share. Look, it's not been an intended consequence of Obama or Clinton, but when they go in and they supported these regime changes in Syria and Libya and aligned the U.S. with the opposition in both of these countries and armed the opposition, and the opposition gets beaten and the arms end up in ISIS hands. Look, it wasn't intentional, but this is what happened. And, you know, displaced in Syria, half the population, 11 million refugees from that, from what is that civil war. Long term, I think we've had a role in the situation as it is, and long term, I think we need to involve Russia when it comes to a diplomatic solution on the civil war in Syria. But let's take our fair share of those refugees.
Now, on the home front, Gary Johnson, with Obamacare, apparently, according to some of the information coming out, private health care providers may be bailing out of their responsibility. We may be moving to a single-payer system. What would health care, national health care, be like under a Gary Johnson administration?
Well, Curtis, we're not, myself and Bill Weld, we're not going to get elected the dictator or the king. We're going to get elected president and vice president. So there are constitutional limits to power, and those constitutional limits. Look, we're going to either get to go along with what Congress proposes, or we're going to be able to say no to what Congress proposes. But if I could wave a magic wand, I would bring about a free market approach to health care. And in a free market approach to health care, and by the way, health care is about as far removed from free market as it possibly could be, but in a free market approach to health care, we would not have insurance to cover ourselves for ongoing medical need. We would have insurance to cover ourselves for catastrophic injury and illness, and we would pay as you go in a system that I'm going to bet would be cost about 20% of what it currently costs. We have no idea what it's going to cost when we go in to see the doctor. There's no advertised pricing. There's no advertised outcomes. I haven't been to see a doctor in 3 years, and my insurance premiums have quadrupled. So when you talk about health insurance providers that are going bankrupt, well, this is the situation. We're insuring a lot of it's a tax on those that are healthy, paying for those that aren't. I think government could have addressed this situation without doing what we have done. The cat's out of the bag, but count on Bill Weld and myself to sign on to anything that makes health care better or reduces the cost of health care.
All right, very quickly, Libertarian Party presidential candidate Gary Johnson will be covering here at WABC the first of the three presidential debates at Hofstra University in Long Island at the end of September. What do you have to do to qualify to get on the stage, and how can our listeners help you get to that point?
Well, we got to be at 15% in the polls, and Curtis, I'm optimistic that we will be there. 70% of Americans don't even know who we are. And so with this interview right here, this will probably shoot us over the top to begin with, but thank you. But when people get to know who we are, two former governors that were very successful and encompass that mix of, like I say, being fiscally conservative and socially inclusive and skeptical when it comes to our military interventions, I think that encompasses most people, and we can do the job. So it's just getting it out there, and I'm optimistic that we will. We're raising money right now, and we'll see what happens.
Well, go for it, because Americans are thirsting for an alternative choice, whether in my case I've chosen the Libertarian Party, but others may choose the Green Party. Just don't allow yourself to be boxed into the two parties and then end up complaining, is that the best we can do?
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
ladies and gentlemen, on the drive home at 5. So much so that I want to pimp off on what Donald Trump, Republican presidential candidate, said earlier today about the quid pro quo, the you scratch my belly, I scratch your belly, and you get a meeting with the Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, if you make a contribution to the Clinton Foundation.
The amounts involved, the favors done, and the significant number of times it was done require an expedited investigation by a special prosecutor immediately.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And God bless Associated Press. Because first it was Judicial Watch pounding away in federal court. We want the release of the Hillary Rodham Clinton emails when she was Secretary of State. And notice how evasive she was doing the rope-a-dope. AP had to sue the State Department 3 years for 3 years worth of her communications when she was Secretary of State. 3 years ago, they had to first ask. Then the State Department was very evasive. Then this year, they had to sue the State Department in federal court for those materials and other records. And slowly but surely, they're dripping out. And you heard the headline given by our own Ken Duffy with his news updates at the top of the hour. More than half the people outside the government who met with Hillary Rodham Clinton when she was Secretary of State gave money, either personally or through companies or groups, to the Clinton Foundation. Now, if this ain't pay for play, I don't know what is. You can't do it in the radio business. Remember, there was a huge scandal for years because you'd have DJs over on the FM side. This is the equivalent. The freaking morons, feeble-minded, fornicating madly crowd, always looking for free marijuana, UFM veg heads. So a DJ would play a record because they were getting some scatol in an envelope in order to promote that record. That's pay for play. That was illegal. People went to jail for doing that. And in fact, companies will find mega millions of dollars. On the AM side, the active-minded side, let's just say here on the drive home at 5, because I host this myself, other than the earlier program I do with Ron Kuby, whose mommy is a commie, 12 to 3, Monday through Friday. Yeah, she was kooky, too, when she was alive, but she's a commie. Like mother, like son. But anyway, just imagine all of a sudden I'm discussing with Justin, who's our producer of the Drive Home at 5. This guy, he's very well healed, and all of a sudden he wants to come on as a guest. He knows nothing about nothing, but he's willing to pay me by making a sizable donation to the Guardian Angels, a 501c nonprofit. As you know, I got chapters in 16 countries, 130 cities around the world. It costs a lot of money to run it, not like the Clinton Foundation. But imagine if all of a sudden I say, you know, this guy has nothing to say about nothing, but I could use the moolah shmoolah. Boy, we real, our fundraising quotas are down. So, yeah, let's put the schmuck to putz. Let's put the schmendrick on, who has absolutely nothing to say. Let's bore the audience, but let me help the Guardian Angels. Not only might I be fired and should be fired for that, the company here could be severely fined for that, for pay for play by the FCC. And, hey, quite frankly, in the long run, I should be put in jail because it's pay for play. But look, at our level, FM stations, AM stations, we're small fry and compared, we're trying to score a meeting with the Secretary of State. At least 85 of 154 people from private interest who met her at phone conversations scheduled with Clinton while she led the State Department donated to a family charity or pledged commitments to its international programs. 85 out of 154. And who do you think they went through? Huma! That's right. Where's Anthony the Weiner Wiener now? Is he taking selfies of his schlong there? I don't know. New York Post said he was doing that again. But the point is, you had to go to Huma. And she was the gatekeeper. And you had to say on the hush, hush, mush, mush, hey, Huma, you know, I've been really friendly to the Clinton Foundation. You know, just last year alone, I gave $5 million. And the Secretary of State, she's like not being accommodating. So Homer would say, hold your horses, buddy. You're a good friend of the Clinton Foundation. Don't worry. Within 24, 48 hours, you would have your phone call or you would have your meeting. Absolutely mind-boggling. And then we come up with this Bangladeshi guy because out of the many donors, and there are so many, this guy takes the cake. His name is Muhammad Yunus. He's a Bangladeshi economist who won the 2006 Nobel Peace Prize for pioneering low-interest microcredit for business owners. Sounds like a very good guy, right? Hey, trying to help the poor and impoverished, particularly women in this third world impoverished country where you don't get a heads up and the country throws nickels around like manhole covers when it comes to helping their women. Well, apparently he was running afoul of the law with the Bangladeshis, and they had a full round-the-clock investigation because apparently he was double-dipping. That's right. He was doing good work, but he was also making sure that he took care of his own Bangladeshi needs. Him, his family, his extended family. You know how large your family can get when all of a sudden you need that scatterall, right? So all of a sudden, he keeps contributing millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation. And he goes, Hillary, you got to save me. You got to intervene with the Bangladeshi government. They want to put me in jail. And Hillary flies all the way out to Dhaka, the capital. Now, she's there on other business. She ends up going to India and Pakistan and meeting with the leaders there. But while in Dhaka, she meets with the government about who and about saving whose neck from the long arm of the law? Muhammad Yunus, who had donated a total of $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. And the list goes on and on. And remember where this all started, ladies and gentlemen. It was from the email drop. That's right. Hillary has said the emails, they're boring. They're about my yoga visits and upcoming weddings and how my daughter Chelsea was doing. Remember the email drop that talked about that Russian company that had purchased a Canadian company that was actually mining one-fifth of our uranium here in the United States? So the Russian company comes in, they purchase the Canadian company, it's an international transaction, and the Secretary of State has to sign off on it in order for it to come about and be legal. Well, after millions of dollars at this Russian company, and remember, she supposedly hates Vladimir Putin, right? Trump loves him. She hates him. But the Clinton Foundation certainly took his rubles, his euros, his hidden dollars, you know, from his Panama accounts or his accounts that are out there in the Cayman Islands or in the Swiss banks. Anyway, she took the money of the company, and then Bill Clinton was paid $500,000 to give one speech by a company that was pumping up the stock of the Russian company. $500,000 for their personal aggrandizement. This woman is a crook. She is a liar. She is evasive. Both her and Huma need to have a special prosecutor appointed lickety-split to investigate them before this country might move in a horrible direction. And then if you want to meet and greet the President of the United States, I want to wash my mouth out and even saying it, Hillary Rodham Clinton, you got to pay for that? Oh, yeah. That'll be round two of a Clinton administration. Pay for play.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city. The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Five thirty-nine on your drive home at 5. Recently, I was at an animal rescue fundraiser out in Hampton Bay where the folks, they go into the wilds. They rescue creatures who have been injured. They make sure they get repaired at an animal hospital and then released back into the wild. And I met Steve Levy, the former Suffolk County executive and president of Common Sense Strategies, and he was kicking back with me about the most burdensome laws in New York State. And he started clicking through them, and I said, oh, we got to have you on air because you're right on time. Thanks for joining us, Steve, on the drive home at 5.
Oh, great to be with you, Curtis. Thanks.
All right, my pet peeve, you can be a civil servant, and all of a sudden, after 20 years, you get to retire half pay and a full load of benefits in perpetuity for you and your whole family. When is this craziness going to stop?
Well, you know, it is getting to the point of collapse, and, you know, I hope we don't have to get to the point of Detroit or Greece or Puerto Rico before our state legislators wake up. Now, I should say up front, this is not the case for all employees. You got some employees been working for, you know, government employees working for 30 years. They're making about 50, 60 grand. We're not talking about those folks. We're talking about folks who are making in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then a few years before retirement, they built up the overtime and they're retiring on a $175,000 pension. This stuff is unsustainable, and we're heading off a cliff.
All right, what about controlling the Medicaid benefits in New York?
Well, you know, what we put together in the Center for Cost-Effective Government what we consider to be the top 10 worst laws in New York State that add to our property tax burden, which, as you know, Curtis, we could pay 10 grand more via property taxes as an individual homeowner than they do in Carolina or other places. And these are the reasons. I mean, some folks can work in government for 20 years and cash in. And when you get that overtime that's put into the on top of your base salary, it's an incredible amount of money that taxpayers can't bear. Taxpayers are picking up that tab.
All right, so how does New York handle its Medicaid payments differently than other states?
Well, Medicaid's another example of what where New York does it differently than others. If New York State just did the type of things required under Medicaid under federal requirements rather than the extras that we put on top, we would save about $1 billion a year. I'll give you an example. There's the federal requirements for an alien. I'm talking about a legal alien here, a person who's here properly. They're not necessarily entitled to Medicaid and all these benefits immediately. You sometimes have to wait 5 years before you're eligible. But here in New York State, whammo, immediately you're getting these benefits. If we just followed the federal norm, we'd save billions.
All right, what about in New York City when I walk around? It's so pristine, it's so beautiful sometimes, the buildings. You can't even look at the architecture any longer because there are freaking scaffolds everywhere. They've got scaffolds up. You never see any workers. You never see anything being lifted up or anything being polished or blasted off of the concrete or the brick. What the hell are all those scaffolds doing up?
Well, the scaffolds are there for safety for the workers, which is fine. You have to have that. But we have things here in New York, our laws and regulations, that are unique to states around the country, which is why it's so darn expensive to be here. One of them is the scaffold laws, which reformers have been trying to change for years. But this basically says that the owner of the building is 100% liable for injuries to a worker regardless of fault. So even if the building owner had no fault at all, and the guy was drinking and fell off the scaffold, the building owner is going to pay, sometimes maximum amount. Some have said that this has added $10,000 to every new home that's built. They've estimated that it could be $200 to $400 million in additional dollars that go into the building of the Tappan Zee Bridge. About $785 million extra blown through the window because of this crazy law that exists only in New York State.
So let me get this straight, Steve Levy. A bunch of workers, they're up on a scaffold. They're doing their work. It's their lunch break. They decide to knock back some Irish car bombs. They're drinking Jameson straight. And they're half in the bag. And one of them steps on what he thought was the last plank of the scaffold, and he falls down, and he breaks every bone in his body. So the company that hired him, meaning the building owner, is responsible for him being a drunk.
In New York State, correct. In other states, they do something called comparative negligence, and you take into account the negligence of that individual worker. But we're crazy in this state, and it's in large part because of the municipal unions and the special interests, and we bleed through the nose because of these laws.
Now, what about sick day abuse? Because I notice a lot of these civil servants, they'll accumulate sick days, they don't use them, and then all of a sudden, they get flushed with our taxpayer cash at the end of their 20, 25 years or more that they do.
Yeah, well, this really depends on a county-by-county, town-by-town basis. For instance, in New York City, you use your sick days or you lose them. But some of the contracts out on Long Island, for instance, you get, for instance, a Suffolk County police officer, God bless them, but they get 26 sick days off a year on top of 25 what they call X days in between the shifts, and they get personal days and 6 weeks vacation, et cetera. But if you don't use your vacation or your sick day, it gets banked. And then when you leave, you cash them out at the salary level on the year that you're retiring. Some of these fellas and gals are leaving with checks of $300,000-$400,000, Curtis, just for sick days that they didn't use over the course of their career. It's crazy.
There's no doubt, and I appreciate it, Steve Levy, former Suffolk County Executive and President of Common Sense Strategies, for reminding us of this whining, dining, and pocket lining by lobbyists, especially up in Albany, who make sure that the status quo remains. Imagine, you're drinking Jameson, right, straight, and you're knocking them back, the Irish car bombs. You fall off a scaffold at a job site. And the guy or the gal who owns the building or the corporation is responsible for your malfeasance? How can that continue? Ching, 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 ching. That's right. Elected officials get wine, dined, and pocket lined. That's how.
Deep connections.
I really think it's free speech.
Deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Well, well, on the drive home at 5. What do you think that Black Lives Matter was doing at West Hampton Beach? That's right out in the Hamptons. This past weekend, they were looking for the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazis. Now, I know that many of you love that movie. I did too. Ed Norton in American History X. You play a great neo-Nazi, remember? He gets raped in the prison. Okay. So you get your jollies off watching that. Now they got a new one with what? Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe. He's trying to be a neo-Nazi. How are you going to see Harry Potter as a neo-Nazi? But Hollywood tries and tries because the big boogeyman in America, for all people naturally, are these neo-Nazis and these Ku Klux Klan members. Now, we don't know where they are. We don't see them. And occasionally there's a leaflet that suggests that they're coming out. And this causes us to all galvanize black and white together. We're going to fight the Klan plan. So these idiots of Black Lives Matter are marching around in West Hampton Beach all weekend long looking for the Klan and looking for neo-Nazis. Tell them, come on out. Come on out and play like in the Warriors, right? Actually, there are no neo-Nazis. There's lots of hipsters and millennials, and they're over at the Bordy Pond there, and they're looking into their crisper, you know, the refrigerator at the place they're shacking up with, looking for the brewski and the Jameson, you know, to get bombed in. They're the only white people out there, right, of the same age as Black Lives Matter. And so I called the Black Lives Matter out in Long Island. I say, hey, fellas, gals, why don't you spend your time more productively? If Black Lives Matter in Nassau County and in Suffolk County and Strong Island, how come you're not out in the dance? That's right, the dance. Where the Bloods and the Crips, blacks, are shooting at one another, you know, black on black crime. Oh, and they said to me, oh, yeah, but that's not what we're about. We were out looking for the Klan and the neo-Nazis. I said, okay, you don't want to go to the dance. It's a little dangerous. A little milder Brentwood, because there you got blood shooting at Crips. You know, you could go out and scream to the brothers and sisters, don't kill each other, don't shoot each other, Black Lives Matter. I said, not Brentwood. I said, how about Central Islip, right? I mean, they have problems there, right? Black on black crime. We'd rather look for the Klan. We'd rather look for the neo-Nazis. I say, you know something? Come towards the border with Queens and Nassau County. Go right into Hempstead. Bloods and Crips, they're battling all the time in the streets. In fact, recently, it was a Crip who shot a Blood's 12-year-old sister right in her house as she was serving dinner. And you know something? They hung up on me. They introduced me to Mr. Click. So I'm wondering, maybe Justin, I'll put you on this because you're about as white as any person I've ever known, and you're from down south, so maybe you got some Klan blood in you. I'm going to send you out there to the Bordy Pond, you know, with one of those big Jugmeister jugs, you know, that you fill up the drink of your choice, and you're going to get bombed with the rest of the hipsters and the rest of the millennials this weekend there at Hampton Bay, and you're going to find out if there really is a Klan plan. If the millennials and the hipsters are really secretly neo-Nazis. You know, I have a feeling more of them after they get drunk will be like Ed Norton in Fight Club. You know, where they do a Popeye Twister punch on themselves. And they knock themselves back into some glass and bust every bone in their own body. But there ain't no Klan out there, Black Lives Matter or neo-Nazis. Wolf tickets.